I won't pick on people. So, anyone want to feed back what their group needs to talk about? Who had a particularly interesting discussion? Maybe I should pick on people?
I would just say something to say now. I mean, it was basically. So we were talking about the involvement of other groups, and after our mode about our favourite invading group with Ballard, we went on to just talk about how agency of the person who was experiencing or the group who was experiencing things that mattered and always mattered. But that's really difficult to square when we've got people locked in planes or in detention centres. How do we work with that kind of contradiction through being principled about supporting people who we can't allow a voice, who we can't hear their voice very clearly in the activities we can? It's a question for us all.
Does anyone want feedback from this group? You maybe want to say a bit about what the quote was that you were talking about. Can you stand up again?
Our question was on questions for the discussion. What kind of relationship should grassroots anti-deportation campaigns have with the state? What does self-help look like in grassroots organising today? And do you think groups resisting deportation feel that no action or organisation is possible? And then we got stuck, as it says, with outside funding. But you think you meant without funding?
Yeah, sorry, it was a direct quote from the bit above, and I
got it wrong a bit. Right. we sort of discussed which different groups we were from, and I think we came to the conclusion that yes, funding from the state in essence is designed to kind of buy off groups and organisations. The question is, what kind of restrictions are placed on groups that go for funding, and that we clearly have to be holding on to the principles of standing with those who are making the demands, rather than forming our organisations, which would then go on to be organisations there for the money, rather than there for the struggle. Anybody want to add anything?
I guess we also talked a bit about the tension that arises around the involvement of money at all, and that with the change in, with the way that money now pervades every area of life in a way that maybe it didn't so much 25 years ago. Oh my God, that's not even that long ago now, is it? longer than that ago. That makes. So the way in which now it's very hard to get by if you're on benefits or if you have to pay rent, like that means that your time is really, really limited, and therefore you're like forced into using a lot of your time to be getting money together one way or another. And the tension of that between like not being able to not do that, because in order to live in London you have to find some way to live, and with the criminalisation of squatting that's become a lot harder. And how does that like suppress our ability to organise and mobilise together?
Does anyone have any specific reflections or things they talked about in their group around looking back at these quotes from 30 years ago, and what it means to kind of look at them from the present? Did any of the conversations sort of take that sort of turn?
Just thought about the kind of history of the GLC and how it brought we gave funding, and it was quite liberal with it, and people, as far as I understand it, people were able to do quite a lot with it. Some did and some didn't. And it's a question of, what was interesting in our discussion was about what we did with the money and how it was used before the movement, and in what way that it breaks up the movement and creates a direct relationship, hierarchical relationship with the state. That and we rely on it. So when the funding is taken away or diminished, then they're in control of the power dynamics that will result from that.
And did anyone from this side of the room have a burning thing they wanted to share?
We just reflected on the idea of I suppose our duty of care when we are inviting people from outside, whether it be local business councils or journalists, because in my own experience, I think the precarity of status means that when people are gathering in the space and sharing, the presence of an MP or local councillor generates so much fear of this idea of state surveillance, or perhaps suddenly we're all just going to get I think it's like really recognising the amount of work that needs to be done in increasingly difficult communities when we are approaching MPs and councillors and making sure everyone's really connected. That's communicated at every point along the way. So just a reflection.
Yeah, I think I
We also talked about the issue of funding being, especially privatisation of or contracting out services to NGOs and what a very corrupting effect that has had. So, for example, the Refugee Council got $65 million to implement the government's NAS accommodation and voucher system at the beginning, and that meant that it went from being a place where you might get some independent advice to a place where they were the people who were putting you on the bus. I was going to say deporting you, but what do I mean? Dispersing you. Or, where you were living in crap housing, where, for example, a woman was raped by a security guard and the Refugee Council refused to do anything about it because they were then became the body who was responsible for that housing. So I think that was a crucial issue of the way in, the privatisation and the contracting out of some of those services. And Crystal made the point about the groups who are now being contracted to do the voluntary returns, voluntary, in inverted commas, returns process, which means that they are complicit with a very brutal government policy, but they are the ones who are administering it, as I understand it. I'm not very familiar with the current situation.
There's a number of those, but there's also Bernardo's, the various organisations have not done what their brief is because they've taken government funding.
Okay. Anyone else?
One more point. We were talking about money and corrupting influence of money, and we talked about accountability, because taking the money is really, the thing that's really accountable to is it people on the front line, on the sharp end, or is it just funding to line your organization's pocket? And the other thing is that the money, that government money, is our money, and we're taking it from them to use for grassroots movement, to take it out of their hands. And in the best of circumstances, but also with the funding, we can't be silenced with the, where volunteer organizations are supporting state policies. We also, the funding can't be a gag. We have to call out the people who are undermining the movement, like the call for the 28-day limit, which is a very dangerous demand, and now some of the big NGOs are now calling for that alongside the Labour Party. So I think we have to really be vocal and call that out.
I think the big basic thing that they're saying about money is that control. If you know what you want to do with the money and you get the money from governments, I absolutely agree. It's our money, it's not their money. And we say what we're going to do with it, and we do it. And that's what the campaign group wanted to be done. And so, but there's also all the dangers that we mentioned as well, when it's not totally clear from the grassroots what's this money is meant for.
Yeah. And what's kind of great about the exercise of going through the archives is we don't have to deal with some of these issues of hypotheticals, because there are like kinds of decisions that people made at different points in the history of like resistance movements. Did anybody have any conversations around like relationships to other institutions such as like churches or other religious bodies, trade unions? Because we've got the example of the Farage Mendes case, both in the George Packer Institute and also in the Tandana collection, where he was given sanctuary. So I think he was seeking asylum from Sri Lanka, and he was denied political asylum. And then he was given sanctuary in a local church, and was there for a couple of years, I think. And I think in the US, there was quite a much stronger history of like sanctuary movements, not just in churches, but in temples and in mosques as well. Just wondering if you had any kind of conversations around that.
That's definitely still happening in other places too. In Sweden recently, I think, there were like days and days and days of a continuing service that meant that someone couldn't be, months I think was the case, that couldn't, so someone wouldn't be deported. But also in a more, more locally, there's a mostly Filipino church in one in North and one in Northwest London, both of which have had incidences of the police or immigration officials turning up in the vicinity, clearly kind of prowling around, waiting to essentially do a raid or a check, and had like the clergy just be like, nope, sorry, doors are closed, everyone's staying here, you can stay as long as you want, but no one's leaving, and actually that's been quite effective, and often those stories just get shared kind of person to person and don't necessarily get press or anything, and maybe that's for the best in some situations.
Yeah, definitely thinking about members of my own family and how who are going through gone through detention and potentially might be deported, how important these different kinds of institutions like churches and like religious spaces are to them, and how for me as a grassroots organiser and campaigner I might shy away from being relating to those spaces, but those are the spaces where people on the front lines do go to for various kinds of support. So I think we have to have a more kind of complicated relationship with them, a more nuanced relationship.
We also have to know if they're involved in things like voluntary intent.
Yeah.
Because the Home Office have targeted groups as well.
Also, part of the reason that the Home Office are able to go and get groups involved and get them to sign on to things like having people there talking about voluntary returns is because, like, migrant solidarity groups don't go in and have those conversations, so it leaves a kind of vacuum state to go and have that conversation and co-op those organisations. So in a sense there's also a kind of urgency about going and doing some of that, because otherwise it leaves the space really open, I think.
Yeah. And also for exploitation, because I think about a lot of like African churches, people, and I've had this conversation both with churches and even people going to see like traditional priests, like people spend thousands of money in church for prayers, and I've often thought like what it would mean for them to sit with an organiser, like pray, that's what you need to do, but also know that these are the channels that you can take. And a lot of people there just put their blood faith in something and then get deported quite quickly because they didn't have the information they needed.
Yeah, I think in the Right to Be Here pad, which is also having it up online, we'll probably make a specific section of the website actually for visitors because we've got so much in the different sessions. But they talk there about people using churches, and then some of the minority churches saying we can't do this stuff because we're too afraid of the state coming down on us. And then actually the crucial importance of the Church of England when they have stepped up and said you can use Church of England space. And that also being some important work that how are those churches maybe supporting some of these other churches whose members are probably being more affected by this stuff, and to then look historically and say, because you used to do it in the 80s sometimes.
Yeah, it's interesting because they've used the language now, the state uses the language offering city of sanctuary, so they've stolen our language.
Did you have something else to say here? I just want to back up what I think was really an add some comment to what she said. She said that in that country, in that state, in Switzerland.
Here,
I mean, in that state, that country that she spoke about, I think it's Switzerland. Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
But Switzerland. person was not able to be successful in taking away the asylum people from the Church of Services, because in that country they have a law that if you are protected by the community and if you are protected by your faith, they cannot snatch you away. So even if the door was open in the church, we could not have moved them as long as they're on the premises. But they would have closed the door for safety, because I read further on that situation and it says in that country, asylum is protected if you have a faith and you're in the faith and you're in the premises and you're doing that. So they stayed there for a couple of months and they were able to be protected. They cannot be snatched away by immigration. If such law was in this country, it would have been helpful. So I just wanted to add to that, because she didn't actually mention that bit, which is very important, because without that, you know, they would have been able to snatch them. But there's a law protecting them with the fee. Okay. So,
thank you. So we're going to go on to the last part of the day. So we're going to show the film Tasting Freedom, which is made by a collective called Migrant Media. And it sort of talks about, looks at what was happening in the early 90s, hunger strikes and detention then, as well as the tribunal that happened, similar to what you're going to be trying to do out on Monday. We're not going to show the whole film, because you can watch it for free or two, you know. So the link will be up, but just to give us time and space at the end to like reflect, because we've got something from all African Women's Group and from some of our detainee support and loads of other incredible organisers in the room, so we can have a further discussion. We're maybe going to show about like 20 minutes of it. So I'm going to give everyone like a 5 minute break, so that if you're staying, get comfy, believe it, you know, that's okay. But we come back in the next 5 minutes and then we'll put the phone up. So good.